Okay, so the King James says it a little bit differently. Purging all meats. That's very literal. That's how the Greek is. Purging all foods. And so the NIV translation has taken us and what does that mean, purging all foods? Well, purging is related to the word purifying. And so they've reconfigured the sentence to say, and then they've added the words in saying this. So originally in the Greek it just says purging all foods. And out of that they've reconfigured the words and added a phrase, and now it says, in saying this, Jesus declared all foods clean. Okay. What's purging all foods? Going to the bathroom. Literally, it's going to the bathroom. You know, Walter Kaiser, who's a big theologian, big name theologian, saw work on this passage in Holy Cow, and he presented it at the SBL, which is Society of Biblical Literature, and he presented this interpretation of Mark 7 at the Society of Biblical Literature. Someone who was there told me about it and said that when he did, he quoted me in saying that this was actually potty talk. I think he's received very well. It says, after he left the crowd, he entered the house. This is the outhouse. You know, this funny thing. First century, you'd think, how would we know about the outhouse? But let me tell you something. If I used to have a running dialogue with a friend, Steve Peterson. Those of you who know Steve Peterson. We used to email each other back and forth with a running dialogue of emails called Talmudic Potty Talk. Where we would find just passage after passage where the sages would be talking about the outhouse, like using the outhouse or what happened in the outhouse. In the ancient, and when you go to Israel, you'll see it, and you can see, oh, okay, I see this. It kind of gives me the context here. It's kind of a social situation in the outhouse, but it's a bench with this, you know, holes and. Yeah, right.
Our two-holer
little walls.
Had nothing on them.
No, 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 yeah.
You need to have at least a seven-hole.
Right.
Oh, my God.
Right, yeah. Yeah, so, well, we won't go any further with that.
But do go further, because I want to ask you something.
Uh-huh. 717.
Oh, that's the house he entered.
That's the house.
Okay.
Can you just read it one more time?
One more time. Mark 7:17. This is right after the discussion with the Pharisees. After he had left the crowd and entered the house, his disciples asked him.
While they were.
No. The word in Greek is oikos, which is just the word for house, and it applies to any structure. Okay, so it is context here that is supplying. It's the actual conversation. The food goes in the mouth, out the drought. Yep. Purging all meats. So that it's context that's giving us the outhouse image. What's the other one he has? Let's look at the other one. Let's move on. Matthew chapter 6. Does everybody understand that in saying this, Jesus declared all foods clean is not a warranted translation of the Greek?
I was taught that it was at the Pharisees' house.
At this whole situation, it's not a question of, is that kosher or not? You know, we're talking about bread. The whole context is bread. Nobody has brought up, and what about a zebra? Can you eat a zebra? You know, nobody, it's not even, okay, Matthew chapter 6, did he say? 6:25. Okay, now, what do you think about this as overturning the kosher laws? Therefore, I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about what your body, what you will wear. Is not life more important than food, and the body more important than clothes? Yeah. Yeah, it has not even, we're not talking kosher whatsoever here. Okay, and here's the thing. Even though he's citing these passages, Asher Norman knows this is weak. And so he says, these statements attributed to Jesus are ambiguous. Jesus' statement, what comes out of the mouth, this defiles a man, cannot pertain to kosher laws. Look, listen, he's going to bat for the master. Cannot pertain to kosher laws because food goes into the mouth. Instead, they appear to refer to the laws of Lashon Hara and slander. Jesus' statements, there is nothing that enters a man from outside that can defile him, and don't worry about what you will eat and drink, are ambiguous since they do not explicitly oppose any kosher law, nor does Jesus explicitly tell any Jew to eat non-kosher food. It's very interesting. He brought up the argument, and then he... Yeah, then he defended it. Yeah, very interesting. So then he comes back with this theory, an even more difficult, convoluted theory. How are we doing for time? Not too bad. He says, here's what happened. This is his explanation of how it is that Christianity began to eat unclean foods. He said, here's what happened. Paul is against keeping the law. So he's eating unclean food. Peter, on the other hand, is keeping kosher like he learned from Jesus and, you know, is a good Jew. Then in Galatians chapter 2, Paul rebukes Peter for not eating the unkosher food. You know the passage, Galatians 2. I opposed Peter to his face. Mm-hmm. So then, he says, Luke, Paul's follower, who wrote the book of Acts, invents the story of Peter hearing a voice from heaven and seeing the vision of the sheet three times, and the sheet tells him that he no longer has to keep kosher. So this is how he explains what's happened. There's a couple problems with this theory. One is that in Galatians, Paul does not rebuke Peter for his failure to eat unkosher food. He rebukes Peter for separating from the Gentiles. And that is a food issue. But the issue is not that the food is unclean. The issue is that the food was in contact with Gentiles, even though they're Gentile believers. Yeah. So that is a food issue. And that is the issue, that's the same food issue that the vision of the sheet was meant to address. Acts chapter 10, we know Peter interprets the vision of the sheet. He says, in no uncertain terms, God has shown me that I should call no man unclean. That's the meaning of the vision. No man. Right. So, Asher Norman says, he points this out, he says, after creating this theory, it's kind of a straw man because he created the theory and then he knocks it down. He says, if during Jesus' lifetime, Jesus had really taught that the kosher laws were no longer in effect, then Peter's dream permission by the dead Jesus would be redundant. Yeah. Isn't that... That is actually pretty good logic, though, if you think about it for a second. It's like, many people stand on Mark 7 to say, Jesus declared all foods clean. But then, how is it that we get to Acts 10 and Peter's like, not so, Lord, I've never eaten anything unclean. And it's like, he has got to do this vision three times. Well, you'll hear, the explanation would be, well, you know, the disciples, they're slow, thick-headed, holding on to their Judaism is an expression I've heard more than once. Holding on to their Judaism. All right, next point. The Torah allows divorce and remarriage. Yes. Deuteronomy 24. Deuteronomy 24, verse 1. When a man takes a wife and marries her, and it happens that she finds no favor in his eyes because he has found some indecency in her, and he writes her a certificate of divorce and puts it in her hand and sends her out from his house, and she leaves his house and goes and becomes another man's wife, and if the latter husband turns against her and writes her a certificate of divorce and puts it in her hand and sends her out of his house, or if he dies, who took her to be his wife, then her former husband, who sent her away, is not allowed to take her again to be his wife, since she has been defiled. For that is an abomination before the Lord. You shall not bring sin on the land which the Lord your God gives you as an inheritance. All right, that is the law of divorce. So he says, see, the Bible, the Torah, allows divorce and remarriage. It's right there. If he marries her, and he divorces her, and she goes and marries another man, that's all fine. The only thing that's a problem is if she decides she wants to be remarried to her first husband after she's already married another man. That's what the Torah doesn't allow. However, he says, Asher Norman says, Jesus limited or opposed divorce and remarriage. Jesus stated that remarriage after divorce constitutes adultery. You need to find this in Matthew 19:9. And this attempts to make the Torah stricter than it is, which violates Deuteronomy 4:2 and Deuteronomy 13:1. So Deuteronomy 4:2, Deuteronomy 13:1 is, you're not to add to the Torah or subtract from the Torah. And so he's saying, when Jesus forbids divorce and remarriage, calling it adultery, he's making the Torah more strict, and therefore he's violating the Torah, Deuteronomy 4:2. Now, I want to take this on for a second before we even hit the divorce material. I would like to consider that from the perspective of an Orthodox Jew, that making the Torah more stringent is a violation of Deuteronomy 4:2 and 13:1. The irony is a little too thick there.
Explain mixing.
Yeah, or anything. You know, I mean, This what rabbinic law, a lot of times rabbinic law is loosening, you know, so it goes both ways, but that's relaxing. So rabbinic law is always tightening or relaxing a certain commandment through the interpretation of how it's to be kept. All right, so Matthew 19:9, this is a problem. I will admit it's a problem. If our understanding is that in Old Testament times, divorce was allowed, but now it's not. That's a problem. That's a change. So, Matthew 19:9. Actually, 8. Let's start in 8. He said to them, "Because of your hardness of heart, Moses permitted you to divorce your wives. But from the beginning it has not been this way. And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for immorality and marries another woman commits adultery." All right. Got it? It sounds to me, I would have thought, that what he's saying here is, in the old times, under the law, you were permitted to divorce because you're so hard-hearted. But now you're not. And if you do and remarry, it's adultery.
No, but he says.
Yeah, except in the case of immorality. Mm-hmm. Of immorality. Okay. So I wanted to look at this in a little bit more context. And we'll do it rather quickly. Matthew 19 says, when Jesus finished these words, he departed from Galilee, I'm in verse 1, and came into the region of Judea. Large crowds were following him. And in verse 3, some Pharisees came to Jesus, testing him and asking him, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any reason at all? Now, here's the context for this. What did the Torah say? The Torah said, if a man finds some indecency in his wife, right? I have here tractate Gittin. Nope. Yes, I do. Yeah, Gittin and Kiddushin. Marriage and divorce. Of the Mishnah. And this provides the context for this discussion. Pharisees are coming, they're asking him a question. And you think, wait a second, do they not know if it's lawful to... Do they not know the answer to this? Didn't they just read... Couldn't they just look at Deuteronomy like we did? Mm-hmm. But the question is, how do you interpret Deuteronomy 24? Because it says... he can divorce her if she doesn't find favor in his eyes because he found something unseemly in her or indecent in her or something like this. And so the question is, what does that mean? What qualifies as a legitimate grounds for divorce? So it says in Gittin here, which is, it's a whole tractate about how to write a get. A get is a certificate of divorce. You needed to get a professional to do this. You needed to get a scribe to write a get, just like you need a scribe to write a ketubah, which is your marriage document. So it's a lawyer. You need a lawyer to handle this. The house of Shammai, Beit Shammai, say, a man may not divorce his wife unless he finds in her something unseemly, as it is written, because he has found something unseemly in her. And they interpret that then as unchastity. Unseemly is unchastity to the house of Shammai. The house of Hillel, the Pharisees of the house of Hillel say, even if she spoiled his food, it's unseemly. As it is written, because he has found some unseemly thing in her. So the house of Hillel, which is known for being more lenient in their interpretation of the Torah, they're like, yeah, well, you know, even if she didn't, she spoiled the food. She was supposed to make supper and it didn't taste good. He can divorce her. Yeah. Rabbi Akiva says, so Hillel and Shammai, this argument is contemporary with the Gospels. Hillel and Shammai lived before the Master. So this is an ongoing argument in the days of Yeshua. Rabbi Akiva is a generation later, and he weighs in on it here. It says, Rabbi Akiva says, even if he finds another more comely than her, as it is written, and it shall be if she find no favor in his eyes. So Akiva is obviously with the school of Hillel on this matter. So that's the context. The Pharisees come and they say, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife, as Hillel says, for any reason at all? And he answered and said, have you not read that he who created them from the beginning male made them male and female? For this reason a man shall leave his father and mother, be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. They are no longer two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let no man separate. And they said to him, okay, that's nice. But then why does the Torah say... No, here's how they said it. Then they said to him, why then did Moses command to give her away, or to give her a certificate of divorce and send her away? Moses commanded to give her a certificate of divorce and to send her away. Okay, so now here's another discussion. Here's another question. And I have here, Tractate Eruvin of the Talmud. And I want to pick that thought up. Why did Moses command this? It says three types of people do not even see the face of Gehenna. These are they. Those who suffer the exactions of poverty, those who suffer intestinal disorders, and the pursuit of creditors. And some say, also, someone who has a bad wife. These are the All right. The other opinion has it, though, that it's not a good thing. You won't get out of Gehenna just for having a bad wife, because it says in the English here, it says that it is proper to divorce a bad wife. But that's not what it says in the Aramaic and the Hebrew. In the Aramaic and the Hebrew, it says irdakisha ra'a mitzvah legarsha. It's a mitzvah to divorce a bad wife. A commandment. That's how it's being interpreted by this piece of Gemara. That it's a mitzvah, that Moses didn't say, if a man divorces, he said, divorce your wife. Okay, another example. In the book of Ben Sira, it says, a good woman is a wonderful gift. She is given into the embrace of a God-fearing man. A bad woman is leprosy to her husband. What is his recourse? He should divorce her and thus be cured of his leprosy.